What up, this is Dart Adams, and this is episode 90 of Dart Against Humanity. Today's episode, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to get personal. I'm going to tell a story. My story. So, when this episode is uploaded, it will be August 7th. August 7th is two things. August 7th will be the 30th anniversary of Boogie Down Productions releasing their album, Edutainment, which I will have a 30th anniversary retrospective running on Medium. However, August 7th is a special date for me in particular. Why? August 7th, 2015 is the day that my label, Producers I Know, released its first physical project. So I'd released digital projects before, mostly through like Bandcamp. But on August 7, 2015, not only did it was already on sale. Two projects were already on sale. I mentioned this before. May 20th, 2015, Nolan the Ninja's Lo-Fi Loops was available on the Producers I Know Bandcamp. Foulmouth's Soul Lewis was available on the Producers I Know Bandcamp June 20th, 2015. However, I'd gotten a deal with Fat Beats to distribute Producers I Know releases. So we agreed that the release date would be August 7th, 2015. In order for this to happen, I decided, okay, what I want to do is I want to release 100 limited edition cassette tapes. So I decided I would put up the money to get both of these cassette tapes. We had somebody do the layout, the design, sent all that out, what I wanted the tapes to look like, all that stuff, to a man named Nick at this thing called Enos Media. Enos Media was pretty much the cassette plug for Fat Beats. They already knew the knew where to go, what to do. They'd worked with them several times. Just send the cassettes directly to Fat Beats because they're both in California. So I did that, put up the money. And what that means is that when you put up the money, all the profits come your way because you're not taking any money out from Fat Beats. They're putting nothing up. All they're doing is taking it and distributing it. And when you do this, what happens is you need to have copy. So I wrote all the copy, all the promotional stuff, everything you saw on the website. I wrote all that. When you have releases, what happens is you have to do these things called metadata sheets. I filled out those metadata sheets. And then Fat Beats has Soul Spasm as their digital marketing wing. So Soul Spasm handles the project or the album being available on every streaming or digital platform. This is before there was Tidal. Reminder, again, this is 2015. So doing all that behind the scenes work. So August 7th is the day that Nolan the Ninja's Lo-Fi Loops and Foulmouth's Soul Lewis will be available physically on cassette for purchase. So I do all this. Now, at the same time I'm doing this, now I'm executive producer and A&R of these two projects, but at the same time, I was working as lead A&R for DJ Soko's imprint on Fat Beats, which was called Left of Center. So I'm lead consultant, or as he called me, his consigliere, and I was also lead A&R. So we were working on his album, Domino Effect. And then after Domino Effect, we were working with this guy you might have heard of. His name was Nolan the Ninja. So those were the two things that we were working on the most. And then we were trying to get new acts lined up and the next album lined up. The first thing we had to do was this album is already coming. So we had to get Fat Beats on board with Nolan's project. We had to get Fat Beast excited about Nolan's project. So me and Soko and Nolan are all trying to go back and forth, come up with ideas as to how to do this. August 7th, 2015 comes around. Both cassettes come out. They sell out almost immediately. Fly off the shelves. Now, again, I put up the money for both cassettes. So anything coming back is profit. Now, usually when you do things like this and you start making money, what you do is you split the money because you're the label. I didn't do that. I sent all the money to Nolan and or Foulmouth for the first two tapes. So, and I'm a genius. We had this video out for Soul Lewis. It was doing numbers on YouTube. You know, people were talking about it. People were really excited for it, so they flew out and bought it. Plus, they liked the design, which was done by a guy named Javier Cardiel or Cancer Ugly. The design was gorgeous. The video was gorgeous. You could find it on YouTube. Detroit Soul, Soul Lewis. So we're winning right now, right? And then Nolan put out his own beat video for a single off Lo-Fi Loops that took off on YouTube too. And you have to remember that these tapes had been out, on Bandcamp, had been out for months. So people wanted the physical copy. They were excited for it. And each release was breaking Producers I Know numbers on Bandcamp. So I had an indication, oh, this is going to go really well when we finally release it. Again, they both sell out, sending the money to them. I'm not keeping it, whatever. Now, with that success, it kind of goes to my head a little bit. Because what happens right after that is August 21st, 2015, DJ Soko's Domino Effect is released on Left to Center Fat Beats, right? Now, for the first time in a stretch of like 3 weeks, I have physical product released with my name on it. I'm executive producer and A&R, and it does well. Then DJ Soko's album comes out. You pick up the album and flip it over, and my name is on it. As an A&R, something I'd always dreamed about. I would flip through the liner notes and album credits, and I would see the names of the A&R, and I would just see like the album credits and who did what. And I'm living that. So I actually had something I'd never had before that I'd always dreamed of having. I spent a lot of my time on Discogs, and now I finally had a Discogs page. Now, for those of you that know, and for those of you that don't, I've done A&R work before. I've done stuff I should have been credited for in the past, but wasn't. I was doing a lot of ghost work and behind the scenes work. This is the first time my name is on it. So I'm over the moon. And also, and more backstory, what you need to know is that I had fully intended to quit journalism when I turned 40. I had turned 40 on August 17th, 2015. When I quit journalism, I said, I'm going to be spending most of my time on my label, Producers I Know, and DJ Soko's label, Left of Center. So I had, for the first time in my life, business cards printed up. I got 100 business cards printed up by Vistaprint. Black, two-sided. One side Producers I Know, other side Left to Center. My email addresses, I have two different email addresses. Those who know, know. Same phone number, different titles. One, I'm Chief Creative Officer because I did everything. For Producers I Know. Other side, I'm A&R, lead A&R, and consultant, because that's what I did. Now, I also did consultations on the side. How did I start doing consultations on the side? Because when people saw how successful the rollouts for Lo-Fi Loops and Soul Lewis were, they were like, what are you doing? What do you know I don't know? When they started moving and people were talking about it, more people were like, yo, I got to talk to you. And when people want to talk to you or pick your brain, you immediately tell them your rate. Because working as a journalist and work for hire, you're used to being at the mercy of the industry and waiting for the check and almost dying waiting for the check. I didn't want to live that life anymore. So I'm like, cool, here's my rate. You want to meet? I'm consulting with people. I'm having meetings, doing whatever, getting that money immediately. Very important. And I quit journalism. I told people ahead of time, like, I'm not writing for nobody. Y'all can all eat a dick. Anybody who remembers the time, remembers the time. And also in Boston, one other thing I was doing was I started hosting events and shows. So I was hosting different things, going, getting paid to host events and judge. And then I was still, I was a judge for the Stu beat battles. So I was being known as a personality. And I'm doing that. And I'm like, yeah, cool. I have no problem not writing anymore. However, I'm still writing. I'm writing promotional stuff. I'm writing copy for every project. I'm writing email blasts. I'm writing a bunch of emails. I'm doing a whole bunch of metadata sheets. I'm still writing a shitload, but it's just not about a certain artist. Unless that artist is mine. I'm writing bios. I'm doing everything. That's another thing. I was still writing bios. But I could charge more because I was in demand. Because people were reading my bios and buying projects. So they were like, oh yeah, you somebody now. I can't shortchange you. So those tapes come out, that album comes out, and I'm over the moon. So now we're back to Nolan. What are we going to do with Nolan? Nolan came to us. Now, Nolan was a case where too many people have a talented artist and they want to have them forever. I knew from jump, I think me and Soko both knew from jump, we were not going to have Nolan forever. Why do I say that? Because Nolan came to us with a done album. He came to us with an album. We didn't have to sit there and figure out, all right, how are we going to do this? We need to motivate him, get in the studio. No, he came to us with an album. Now, what we did was like, can't use that song. Can't use that song. That song doesn't fit. I don't like this guest dude on here. I think this beat's too repetitive. Now, from me saying this, you have to realize how long this album was that we're talking about. But we know hearing this album, like, yo, if this comes out, it's over for the game. So we tell Nolan what we like to change, what we want to do, what we want to keep. Can we have this song? And it turns out that the dude on the song did this verse on two other songs. And no, it's not going to work. And so we couldn't have that song, which disappointed me because I really loved that song. But whatever. So we're like, fine. So we're going to take these songs off. But we're going to have this. So I guess that's going to be the bulk of the album. Nolan hits me and Soko and is like, yo, I went back to the studio and I made like 4 or 5 more songs. I'm like, okay. So I listen to him and I'm like, yo, these are crazy. And I'm like, yo, matter of fact, this got to go here. This got to go here. This got to go here. These songs can't be on the album anymore. If you made these, what are these on the album for? They don't even fit on the album no more. So it was like, all right, cool. So we got loose songs. Got like 3 loose songs. So in between me, Soko, and Nolan rearranging the album, and mind you, you know, the cassettes are still moving. And Fat Beats is like, so what's the next move? And I'm like, I'll tell you in a minute. So Soko goes to the studio again and comes back with more heat. And I'm like, well, shit, this batch, this song and this song got to come off the album now. Because there's no way we can keep all these songs. But these songs are fire. I want these to come out. I almost wish these albums could come out before the album does. And me, Soko, and Nolan were like, yo, I got an idea. Fat Beats isn't 100% excited about the album from Nolan yet. Because, you know, Soko's album is good and is doing well. And like DJ Premier has played it. Eclipse has played songs from it. But it's not like tearing up shit. Even though some of the songs have like been on the indie charts. Like, you know, the independent underground rap charts. But it's not like setting the world on fire. So we're like, what are we going to do to get Nolan hot? And I'm like, I got an idea. Let's put out an EP digitally to get everybody excited about the prospects of the album. But what we're going to do, instead of doing the normal roundabout marketing campaign, I'm going to do an anti-marketing campaign, a guerrilla campaign, and we're going to call the project Fuck the Hype. I'm going to call it the Fuck the Hype EP. It's like, yo. Yeah, because everybody's trying to do all this extra shit to get above the noise, and we ain't going to do none of that. We're just going to let the people, we're just going to put the songs up, hit certain people off, and then just like have them spread the word about it. We ain't sweating that shit. Just fuck the hype. It's all about the actual joints. And they're like, yo, will that work? I was like, absolutely it'll work. Mind you, I learned about guerrilla marketing and anti-marketing and using psychology and marketing and music by being in the Killer Boombox dojo when they were in a startup incubator in Roxbury. So I'm learning about all this stuff from Brandon of Show Off Marketing. And I'm just sitting there in the office watching him work. This dude is easily, what's the best word? A mad scientist, an evil genius. Like, this dude knows his business inside and out, and he's a tireless worker. This man will go with a backpack to any venue, any club, anywhere, and he will have that whole place canvassed, set up, promotional materials all around by himself. He's a one-man marketing team. He doesn't have to be because he owns the company. There's nothing he's not willing to do. And being around him and Greg G. Valentino Ball from Killer Boombox and just seeing that hustle and that determination and them getting into rooms where usually you don't see brown people in Boston and making connections and making those, like, tying those ties and dotting those I's and connecting people. They're so good at that. And I saw the fruit of it 5-6 years after the fact. And I was wondering, what are they doing here? Why are they talking to this person? The next thing you know, they bring them to an event. Then they introduce them to this person, which brings them to this person. And now they're in a room they never would have been in because certain brown people in Boston would never have been invited to this thing. But they are the people that opened the door to got this person, that got this person paid and got put money in their pocket. So now they want to do the same for them. And I'm like, yo, I get it. And all these times I was wondering, how come I'm not getting certain opportunities, I'm not doing certain things? Because I wasn't doing the work and I wasn't putting myself out there. So I learned what not to do. So anyway, doing a guerrilla marketing campaign, Fuck the Hype. What ends up happening is like certain people in rap, Vinnie Paz, you know, certain other people, Royce the 5'9", like cats with names that people respect, were just talking about this Nolan shit. DJs just talking about, yo, this Nolan joint is crazy. Static Selector, yo, this Nolan shit is crazy. So what happens is people are like, yo, I need to hear this. So we put out the Fuck the Hype EP on November 10th, 2015. I'm A&R and executive producer of it. It does well. Fat Beats loves it. Everybody's excited about it to the point where Fat Beats like, we need that album. And the funny thing is that the stuff we put on Fuck the Hype made it so that we were able to sequence the album. And we could put out multiple versions of the album. We had one we could put out on cassette. We had one we could put out on vinyl. We had a version that could be on CD. So you got a different experience each time. This was all pre-planned. So we're like, word. Now, between that, what happens is my boy from Detroit, Pat313, I end up bringing him on as an A&R because he knows Soko and he knows a whole bunch of other people, other producers in Detroit and Michigan surrounding areas. And he was just like, yo, I know some people you need to fuck with. So that ended up being Peace of Mind, who I was already had down with me on producers I know. This kid, Jaws Did Bite, that made this really wild, abstract, like, instrumental shit. This other dude, Pigpen. This cat, Nostalgia, who produced songs on DJ Soko's album, Domino Effect. And a dude that I've been fucking with for years, Calvin Valentine from Portland, who I actually knew through the Potholes in My Blog guys, because he had put out projects with them back when he was G-Force as part of another group. Boat Shoes, you know, that was one of my favorite joints. Red Eye Flights, I loved all that shit. When he just became from G-Force, he just became Calvin Valentine. So he was just like, yo, I got something. And I was like, yo, let me hear this. Now, he had his project done. He had the art done and everything. He even had promo videos. And he had a tie-in with a clothing company that was going to put out limited edition gear tied into his cassette tape. I was like, yo, let me put that out. So he was like, cool. So the first wave of cassettes, Foul Mouth's Winner Takes All, Peace of Mind, Drumatic, and Jaws Did Bite, Claws Did Catch. Okay? May 20th, 2016. Which is a year after I released Nolan the Ninja's Lo-Fi Loops, for those who've been paying attention. And then I was going to release the next wave of tapes, July 15th, 2016. That was going to be Pigpen's Incredibly Illegal, Nostalgia's The Formula. Nostalgia's had done the graphic design, everything, made his own video. That's crazy. So go look for that Nostalgia video on YouTube. I think it's called like One Day or something. It's about like a hitman in a mask. And if you see the cover art and everything, yo, this shit is bananas. Haslow, well, he was Haslow then. Now he's Anwar High Sign. And he's made incredible albums. I need to get those out to the world. I apologize for not doing that. I just been dumb busy and I'm really going to have to get on it. And the COVID-19 crisis has not helped me in trying to find a home for these amazing albums that Anwar High Sign put out. But Calvin Valentine, Avocado High. We're going to put his shit out July 15th, 2016. So to repeat, I have 6 tapes coming out. 3 May 20th, 2016. 3 more July 15th, 2016. My first 2 tapes sold out. I'm looking like a genius. Okay? Did the whole project with Nolan, the campaign, everything, went over well. I'm looking like a genius. I'm the 40-year-old boy genius. Everybody's hitting me up. I'm doing consultations. I'm helping people with their marketing campaigns. I'm telling everybody you can't do the same thing somebody else does. You have to do what works for you. If you know somebody who could do animations and put up little like videos and shit on Twitter, do that, you know. Use IG how as effective as possible. Like, I'm telling people all this shit. So here's the thing. May 20th, 2016, I told you about the first three tapes. July 1st, 2016, Nolan the Ninja's Heart album drops, and I'm executive producer. Then July 15th, 2016, I got three more tapes. So spring, summer 2016 is make or break for me. I'm a year removed almost from quitting journalism. So here's what happens. Put out Foul Mouth When It Takes All, Peace of Mind's Dramatic, Jaws That Bite, Claws That Catch, same day. Nolan and Ninja's Heart comes out. It sells out of vinyl on Amazon, and we never posted the Amazon link. So I'm like, wait, what? And this is back when UGHH was still alive. So we got the vinyl link on UGHH popping. It's selling out in Fat Beats. It's moving everywhere else. People buying it in Japan. The cassette, which is red, is fucking amazing. And it's nuts. And it's a different sequence. And everybody's excited about the fact that there's three different, like, experiences for listening to it. Now, come back to July 15, 2016. I put out Pigpen's Incredibly Illegal. I put out Nostalgia's The Formula and Calvin Valentine's Avocado High. Now, I have an IG for producers I know now. So I'm promoting it through the producers I know IG. Calvin Valentine had this nice campaign, these nice videos for online. He did he produced a song for De La Soul. And so he put the making of beat thing on YouTube, and that was getting him some buzz. And it was on all like the producer beat networks, what have you, everywhere. So people were excited about his tape. And when it came out, it sold fairly well. The apparel, the t-shirt sold out. I think they sold out completely. And so I'm like, all right. So July 1st, put out Nolan's album. Nolan's album's doing well. And then July 15th, put out another three. They called it the three pack. So Fat Beast puts out another three pack. Now, here's the thing. I picked my release date May 20th, 2016, because again, May 20th, 2015, Nolan and Ninja. I picked July 15th, 2016, because, you know, it was the date that was open. And I didn't want to make it exactly a month after like I did last time. That's too much product to come out. So I was like, you have to space it out more. So I picked July 15th, 2016. Guys, July 15th, 2016 was one of the most loaded release dates in recent memory. Everything came out. Everything came out. So we got swamped. We got just everything just went out, came out, and we were forgotten about pretty much. Okay? But I'm still, you know, on a high from how Nolan's album's doing. Now, remember this. I'm on a high from how Nolan's album's doing, and I'm on a high from me doing the Fuck the Hype EP campaign that got us to the album. And now everybody's praising me for the album and the campaign that got us to the album. I don't think they knew that it got us to the album, but they know that Dart was the guy. When they say Nolan, they're like, yeah, Dart, Nolan, you know? Now, those of you that know that I didn't know who Nolan was before Soko introduced me to him. And it's Soko's label. But I'm getting credit for shit. I didn't bring Nolan to him. Nolan was his guy. And he brought me in. So what happens is Soko says to me, he's like, yo, Dart, so I appreciate everything you're doing for the label. I think you're great at what you do, you know, as far as consulting and like being a sounding board and doing the A&R stuff and leading stuff. But it's my label and I feel like I kind of have to step up. You know, I have to take charge of these next couple projects. It was going to be A-minus's project come up, and then it was going to be like the next Nolan thing, and then there were going to be some other things coming up. And they didn't, like, some of them didn't pan out for business reasons. But he was like, I think it's important that if it's my label, I take ownership of it. And I was like, that's totally fine, because I have my own label and I have my own stuff to do. And me and Pat313 brought in even more producers. So what happened was Pat was like, yo, Dart, I got this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. So we're going to send you 6 folders of waves and MP3s. Do you think you can make beat tapes out of them? I was like, absolutely. So I hunkered down and I made beat tape after beat tape after beat tape after beat tape. Name beats, sequenced beats. Came up with concepts behind the beat tape. All that. Folder, 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 folder. Zipped, ready to go. All right? What happens? November 2nd, 2016. I get an email from Fat Beats. I open the email. Well, first of all, the email's heading, title was Cassette Overstock. So I'm like, oh, what's this about? I open it and pretty much they're like, hey, so Dart, here's the thing. We need space in the warehouse for a whole bunch of stuff we have coming in for November and December, because we're getting to the holiday season and, you know, we need this space for the warehouse. And we know that this stuff is going to move. So we're going to need you to take some of these tapes off our hands. And I don't. So I'm like, cool. So send me like 25 of every tape that you have that, you know, isn't moving yet. Like, you know, just send 25. That should clear up enough space. I get an email 15 minutes later. The email is a list. That list tells me how much of each tape they have left. Now I'm going to break this down for you. The first tape came out May 20th, 2016, which is about 6 months ago. The second tape came out July 15th, 2016, which is 3.5 months ago. I put out 6 tapes, 100 tapes each. What I didn't tell you is that I took on half the cost. They took on half the cost. When they take on the cost, my profit margin goes down by half. If I take on all the cost, I get all the profits pretty much. They only take so much. But I wasn't going to buy 600 tapes. I'm not rich. And you got to remember, the first time I did this, I didn't keep the money, because I was making money doing other stuff. By this time, I didn't tell anybody this, but between summer 2015, I'm taking my mom to radiation treatments and stuff like that for her cancer. So I'm doing all this business. I'm making these calls. I'm doing these consultations. I'm doing all these posts on Instagram while I'm sitting in a chair while my mom's getting her treatment in the hospital. People are like, yo, how are you taking these nice pictures of the scenery of Boston? Because I was going to the I was on the top floor of the hospital and taking these pictures. I ain't tell anybody any of this shit. If you weren't in the media family, you had no idea. So all throughout this time, coming into 2016, spring 2016, my mom, who was staying in my home because we didn't want to put her in hospice care, finally somebody just shows up like, yo, we can't take care of her. We're not equipped for this. This is a lot of shit was going on that I was not, that it was a lot, and it was kind of traumatic seeing what was going on and her wasting away and me not being able, me and my brothers not being able to like do anything for her. So I was like, all right, we just talked to the hospital. Like, yeah, she needs to go into hospice care. Now, when she's gone from the home and now I'm doing things to try to get my mind off of what's happening next. So, that whole stretch is crazy. That's why I'm putting out all these tapes. That's why I'm doing all this work. But also at the same time, I had quit journalism, right? Get this. I did my goodbye piece on Medium May 26, 2015. But November 7, 2015, I did a 20th anniversary piece of Jizz's Liquid Swords. January 9, 2016, I did 1991, on the other transition year. February 4th, 2016, Janet Jackson's Control 30th anniversary piece. February 10th, 2016, I do JD versus Dilla, 10 years as a JD fan versus 10 years as a J Dilla historian, what have you. Scholar, J Dilla scholar. The Fugees, the score, February 13th, 2016. I did the 20th anniversary piece about Fugees, the score. Then I kept doing pieces all throughout the spring when my mom wasn't around. All throughout the spring, just to like get my mind off stuff. So I'm writing. And then, on August 22nd, I write the big piece. The piece about the Get Down, where I completely critique and break down everything wrong with the Get Down. And that's the one that blows up. Why? Because of this thing called Facebook. And also this thing called Netflix. Everybody watches Netflix. And if there's brown people, they're all going to watch the show with the brown people. And they're going to get mad at the guy who tells them that it's not that good. Because black people's valuation of art is completely different because they think that people sleep on the shit that they do in the mainstream. And I'm like, I don't care if it's either good or it's not good. It could be better. So that made that whole thing blow up from Facebook. Now, mind you, my mom is wasting away. She's going. And every time I go to the hospital to try to see her, I'm getting calls, I'm getting emails, I'm getting DMs about people who want me to come on their show and talk about this hot piece that is tearing up the internet, has the internet going nuts, and is doing numbers on Medium without it being on Q Point, which was Medium's magazine at the time. I didn't want to talk to anybody. My mom passed away August 26, 2016. I put up the piece August 22nd, 2016. Never got interviewed, never did anything, ever. Now, back to this. November 2nd, I get that email. I'm like, yeah, sure, just send me 25 of each. They're like, nah, man. They sent me all the list of all the tapes that they had. Guys, 600 tapes, 300 of which I took the cost on for. 300 of which I took the cost on for. 300 of which they take the cost on for. What that means is that the money that we made, I was only going to see half of it anyway because Fat Beats was going to eat up that other half. Now, what happens when the shit don't move? I had 600 tapes. The overstock consisted of 374 tapes. Of the six projects, 374 tapes. The first two tapes I put out pretty much sold out. They're gone. They're gone. Those first 200, gone. And it was all profit because I put up the money. The next six tapes, there were 374. For those of you that don't know math, I'm going to break it down for you. That's 62.3% of the tapes, the physical copies, were not sold. So I was like, send them to me. Because there was nothing else I could do. So, it's 5 days by mail from California, typically. Next email, I get four tracking numbers. I'm like, what? Less than a week later, about a week later, actually, I have a knock at my door. Apparently, somebody had let them in. They didn't have to buzz. And I open the door, and it's a dude going, I got another one. These heavy ass boxes of cassette tapes. I had four of them that say Fat Beats on them. And I'm like, I'm a fucking failure. I wanted to get these producers paid, get their names out there, all this other shit. And this is what happens. Now, what other also happens when you have a label is that you get statements. So you get statements every 3-4 months, right? And it tells you about how you sold, what you did digitally, how it did in streaming. This is before we were getting the big long streaming thing. I get those now. So I would get back the checks, and there's no way I could split this shit with six people. I'm gonna give you $11. I'm gonna give you $17. I'm gonna give you $9. I'm gonna give you $3.81, and I'm gonna give you 978. That shit don't work. So I'm just like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck did I do? And I'm like, damn, I fucked up. And it's November going into December. And I'm just like, damn. Now, the other part of it is that, remember when I told you that I made beat tape after beat tape after beat tape after beat tape and named them and named them and named them and named them and had them ready to go? Them shits ain't never coming out now, because here's what I didn't tell you. When I put up the money for those first cassettes and I didn't take any of the money because I sent the money to the producers instead. Yeah, I'm in my room now. And the boys is on, and I'm going to have to drop the sound. So there's a reason why I'm in my room. Again, this is where my cassette tapes were, the boxes. I'm looking at a Comcast field collection receipt. Date, December 13th, 2015. This is a field receipt for all the Comcast cable boxes in my home and the modem, signed by me December 13, 2015. Why? Because I didn't pay my cable bill and I got behind to the point where they interrupted my service and they took all my shit. And when they came and took my shit, my mom, who was ridden with cancer, was in a room in a bed. So had to get, and it's the thing is that my mom's old. She didn't watch cable. She just watched the regular channels. So you know how like they had the TV with just like the regular channels. All she did was watch Westerns and talk shows. So that was no issue. Here's the issue. I didn't have Wi-Fi in my crib. So I released all those beat tapes and did all those things and all that stuff. Going to other people's spots, going to other people's places, hurrying up, doing stuff offline. And then when I got there, I would go to people's offices, hang out there. I would have meetings at places that had Wi-Fi so I could do the work of all this production and shit like that. And then thank God, my phone, for some odd reason, always connected to the free Comcast Wi-Fi in my neighborhood. Thanks God I live in a rich neighborhood. So I was always able to use my phone even when I didn't have Wi-Fi in my crib. All right? Y'all didn't know that shit. And yes, I'm making money doing this, but that's just to survive. I didn't have like hand over fist money. You know, and then like as I get back on my feet a little bit, you know, but I'm still like trying to like catch up. Now, anyways, so 2016, shit is kind of fucked up. I finally get back, hustle my ass off, and I get cable again. I get, you know, Comcast back. I get Wi-Fi in my crib, you know, internet, what have you. I get that back. But what also happens is January 24th, 2017. Now, mind you, I told you that I was writing all this stuff, right? I did the Get Down piece. It was huge in August 22nd, 2016. I did this piece about the Super Soldier Serum, 75th anniversary of Marvel doing the Super Soldier Serum. I did this deep dive on it on Medium. Okay? October 22nd, 2016. Then on October 30th, 2016, I did this Ghostface Killer Iron Man 20th anniversary piece. Now, those do really well on Medium. They go all over Twitter. Everybody's talking about it. January 24th, 2017. I get hit up by Bucky Turco on Twitter because I was having some discussion about hip hop on Twitter. And he hits me and he's like, "Hey, Dart, I got a opportunity for you. So I'm an editor over here at Mass Appeal and we need to do something different. And I feel like we need somebody who's not going to, you know, mince words, who's not going to, like, fuck around, who's going to tell it like it is. And I'd like for you to do, like, an op-ed column. Do you have any idea what you'd like to call it? Are you interested in that?" I was like, "Absolutely." He's like, "Give me your number." He calls me. We talk for 45 minutes. He's like, "Do you have any idea what you want to call an op-ed column?" I was like, "Absolutely. I want to call it Knowledge Darts. And I want it to be about because this is where I am in my life. This is what I'm doing. And I'm going to be personal and tell all these stories and all this shit." He was like, "Good, because that's what we need. Too many people are like trying to make themselves look cool and make this shit smoke and mirrors." I'd been too much shit with failure and things falling through and having my dreams and having them fall through for me to want to lie to other people in this medium. I have no reason to lie. Plus, I'm fucking old. You know, I was 41 going on 42. So he's like, "All right, cool. When can you have your first piece?" I was like, "I have that shit done after we get off the phone." He's like, "Word?" I'm like, "Yeah." We hang up. I write the first piece, send it to him. He's like, "Yo, I have three different editors for that shit in like my first three pieces. Him, Ben Meadows Ingram, and then I land on Rob Kenner. And Rob Kenner, fantastic fucking editor. We do the next 40 or so pieces. So I'm on top of the world now because everybody's reading these things like, "Yo, like, damn, Dart's back. Like, Dart came back and he's on a fucking Mass Appeal. I thought he was done. I thought he quit." No, I hadn't quit. But I was like still dealing with the fact that like I had come out of all that bullshit and I kind of needed to win. And I was just like overwhelmed and I was just like, "Lo, I'm going to fucking win. I don't care what it takes." So I'm writing all this deep personal shit and I'm writing exactly how I feel about what's going on and what's going wrong in the game and what needs to be adjusted and blah, blah, blah. I'm going at everybody. I'm going at Complex. You know, I'm going at, I did a piece about Joe LaPuma. You know, I'm just doing pieces about everything and like all the shit that like someone says something, I'm just like, "Nah," or like I'm clearing up misconceptions. I do that for about 42 pieces. Again, I think I got a job, you know? I'm working December 20th, 2017. We hear that Combat Jack passed away. Heard early from the family and friends. Don't tell nobody because, you know, it's important the family tells everybody, you know, and we want to respect them. I'm like, "Absolutely, I get that." Punk ass Paul, Peter Rosenberg, not Paul, Peter Rosenberg breaks the fucking news before everybody's ready to because he's an asshole. I'm broken up. I'm all fucked up. But that night, I'm going to a party, an Adidas party, and it's going to be Static. So the whole crew's going to be out because that's our boy. And it's going to be Alchemist DJing for Action Bronson. So everybody's going to be out. I go to the joint. We there. Static throws something on. He's like, yo, rest in peace to Combat Jack. I check my phone. My phone. I got an email from Mass Appeal. Mass Appeal tells me, hey, Dart, so we're not going to retain you going into 2018. And I'm like, fuck. So I lost a friend and a job on the same day. Cool. Can I at least do a final piece for Combat Jack? He's like, yeah, cool. I wrote that motherfucker like 5-6 times. And then I sent it in. And Rob was like, wow, this is some great shit. And that was the last piece I did for Mass Appeal that ran. But why I'm telling you all this is that I went from the high of finessing a label deal imprint to having my boy be like, yo, I need you to be my A&R and my consigliere on my label. Then everybody being like, yo, you're the man. You're the best at this. You're great. I like to pick your brain. I like to do this. I like to have you on this project. I like to have you do this. I was going around to every like sneaker boutique and I'm talking to people. I'm trying to get in the sneaker game. I'm talking to all these people in clothes and fashion and shit like that. And all that shit fell through. Fast forward years later, I'm in clothing, apparel, and media with the label, which was formerly For Boston, doing the Boston Legends podcast, doing the Boston Legends apparel, and all that stuff that we're going to get back into as soon as some things break with the COVID-19 virus. I've been working nonstop in film, media, television, all over the place doing behind the scenes work. I'm still writing. I'm doing a whole bunch of work. I'm doing more work now than I ever did. But what I'd like to get back to is to the music. But I really don't have the need to super fast. Why? Because Nolan's good. Nolan's on Mellow. He got his situation. Pat313 got his own label, Middle Finger Music. And all the guys that I was telling you about that I work with, they all work together. They all putting out heat. They're getting money. Oh, and one last thing. Remember when I told you I got all those boxes of tapes and I just felt like a fucking failure? Because I couldn't get these guys paid and get them out there and do what I wanted to do. And my name just wasn't that big. I just bit off more than I could chew. Fucking around with my people's like house shoes at Street Corner Music. I was like, yeah, you know, I could do what he does. No, I can't. Difference with house shoes is house shoes has fucking 20 plus years of being a known fucking DJ. The name you know. And he's just known for curating and just having his ear on the best shit. I've done it a few times, but not at that level where people are just going to buy shit just because my name's on it if they don't know who the artist is. I'm not the Def Jam logo. So that didn't work out. But in order to shame me, what I did was I took all 6 of those cassette tapes and I have a dinner table. And I don't have a family here anymore. So I would just take all the cassette tapes and just put them on this dinner table. Just stack them up. And I just look at them and it's like, I'm going to make enough money where I can send everybody their fucking cassette tapes back. So the only people that makes money and profits off of them is them. I start working more and more in media, doing more TV work, doing film work, doing consultations. And I get to the point where I'm actually able to box up these tapes and send them back to the people who made them. And my dream was to, on by the fifth anniversary or the month of the fifth anniversary of Producers I Know, I'm able to send everybody their shit back so they can profit off of their own shit and no one else can. When you go to the Producers I Know page on Fat Beats, there's only three tapes that aren't sold out. There's one copy of each tape. I know this for a fact. Because what's going to happen is, I have a box here. It's taped up. It's ready to go. All I got to do is get my man's new address. I'm shipping his tapes back to him. I have two more boxes to go before August 2020 is up. And I know the Postal Service is trash, but I live across the street from the UPS store. I used to work there back when it was called mailboxes, etc. My mom used to work there too. So what I'm going to do is by the time this month is over, I'm sending everybody their fucking tapes back. Some of them, most of them already got their stuff. And that'll be it. That chapter's closed. I won't be working with another label or putting out more music until I have so much fucking money I could just give you the money up front. I think the last thing I'm going to do in music is find a home for Anwar Hisine's albums because they're too good and the world deserves to hear them. But this is going to be the month I turn 45 and I feel it's appropriate for me to close this chapter. Producers I Know will always exist in some fashion, but it won't be putting out music or physical music until I can put up enough capital where I don't care about what happens with the money coming back. I just want to get people paid. Because that's the only reason why I should be out here doing this. To get people out there and be the person that puts up the money that makes their things happen. Otherwise, what other point is there? So this episode is called Tale of the Tape for a reason. One, it's called Tale of the Tape because it's the name of a famous album that contained a song called Big Beat by Billy Squire, who was a Boston area music legend. The other reason is because it's the Tale of the Tape, because it's about me fucking around trying to put out tapes and trying to be a mogul and trying to bite off more than I could chew and then realizing that the game ain't exactly all sweet and me thinking I could quit journalism and here I am back at it. At midnight, the 30th anniversary piece of Boogie Down Productions Edutainment goes up. I'm turning 45 and I'm still fucking doing this thing. Guys, I got interviewed by NPR. And then I did three more interviews. And then I did another podcast. I'm on Rap Bod Rap Pod. Self Jupiter and me, I'm first. Episode 130. So I'm on that too. I did so many interviews that I didn't even realize that I was on NPR being interviewed until people told me. So I'm not out of journalism. Turning 45 and I'm still here. Thought I was quitting. So that's it, guys. That's the tale of the tape. Episode 90, 10 left, 1.